special, Chris. Really appreciate that. And I believe it's going to coincide exactly to what our brother's going to be speaking about this morning. And I appreciated the verse to not let your heart doubt or fear. That's what we learned a little bit about in our Sunday school class this morning on our new topic, doubt. And we know that Christ has come. We know that he gave his life for us, and we know that his spirit's to be with us. And so I'm excited to hear what our brother has to say and what the words are that the Lord put on his heart to help us be able to help us through this day in which we live, and to encourage us and to edify us. And so I thank Aaron for the work he does and for the messages that he has to bring, because I see them as an inspiration in my life. And we're here to be a light for Christ, and without Christ we would be walking in darkness. So please pay attention to our brother this morning, and to hear those words that God has placed on his heart, and let it help you be a light for him in this day. So, Brother Aaron, give it to you.
Thank you, Gary. That's right, that song does coincide quite well with my words I'm wish to speak. Be very touchy today. All right, don't touch this. But I greet you all in the name of our Savior Jesus Christ. It's good to be back here and see all your faces. I know one of the things that's come up is we've all have less people here in front of us today because of concerns for their health. So, but and it's on some of those things I'd like to talk about today. And we live in some trying times. There's a lot of disparaging things that have taken place this year. A lot of concerns that many people have. Anybody remember 6 months ago there was the threat of World War III? It was Iran was acting up and the U.S. was responding, a lot of saber rattling going on, and there was a whole lot of talk about war and confrontation to get this year started off. Just quickly followed up by the coronavirus. It seemed to take over a big chunk of our lives. Modified our behavior, modified how we act, modified what our governments do, how they act. Yeah. There's been quite a few natural disasters this year, hasn't there? Our brothers and sisters in the Philippines, they suffered from an earthquake, I believe it was. They took out their homes. Our brothers and sisters down in Yucatan had that hurricane come through. Their property was flooded. There's a lot of concerns going on. We've been on quarantines. We couldn't go about our normal business. Things were shut down by and large. Lockdowns are last week. Many states, including our own here in Arizona, we were put on a curfew. Hey, thank you. Put on a curfew. Couldn't be out. And that was because there were the riots taking place. Protests, a lot of civil unrest, the events that have happened. People are unhappy. Unhappy with their government, unhappy with the way things are meted out. Results of imperfect men. And now we've got all these things that are taking place. Well, these are some very trying things. And it's easy to be inundated with this. If you listen to the news, watch our media, it's every day they're blasting the stuff in our face, blasting out no solutions, just problems. It can be kind of unsettling. It can be hard to take courage in times like this. It can be hard to focus on what we need to focus on. And it's things like this that give people, doubt. It's things like this that people that are upset, people that don't believe in the gospel of Christ, it gives them ammunition, or so they think, to talk against us. Oh, do I need to switch out?
Yeah.
And so our adversaries, you know, they take this opportunity to attack, to ask the questions, you know, where is God in all of this? What is he doing? Now you proclaim an all-loving God. Proclaim someone who loves children, who loves every soul created, and yet he allows such suffering to take place. And it would seem that they would have some kind of foothold, some kind of reasonable, you know, question to ask. Why is it that he allows such suffering to take place? You claim him to be all-loving. You claim that he is all-powerful, and yet he allows this to happen. He allows innocent people to suffer from evil, from disaster. Calamity that takes place. Hurricanes come through, earthquakes happen, fires burn. And those people didn't do anything to deserve that. Living their lives, many of them Christian, that profess the same faith or similar faith, and yet here they are, victimized by nature. You know. So what do we do during these times? How do we answer these questions? How do we answer these things? Because if you look at it on face value, it very much seems, you know, why would that happen? And you can kind of get sucked into that if you believe, you claim this God is all-knowing and all-loving and all-powerful. Well, you know, these questions have been asked before. These questions have been answered. We have them in our scriptures. We have them available to us. If we'll but study, we'll read, you'll find that there are answers in here. They answer the first question. Why is it that evil takes place? Why is it allowed to reign? Why does God allow this to go on? If you look in the second book of Nephi, in the first chapter, in the 81st to 100th verse, it starts off in the 81st verse. And this is Lehi, he's speaking to his sons, speaking to his youngest. In this particular instance, his youngest was born in the wilderness. His youngest probably knew nothing but sorrow and heartache, pain and suffering, walking through the desert. His older brothers mistreating his other brothers. A lot of contention. You know, this poor young man knew nothing but sorrow, I would imagine. And in his, fortunately, he had a wise father, which answered it. He said, "For it must needs be that there is an opposition in all things." And he goes on to describe the condition in which, you know, life is. And that in order for there to be good, there must also be evil. You can't have one without the other. It is impossible. If there were no evil, then there would be no good. If we removed all evil, then we would have no good. There has to be opposition. There has to be opposites. We have to suffer pain and sorrow so that we may know joy and happiness and relief. We have to face danger, or there we will not know what safety is. We'll have to face hatred and suffer its effects. Because without it, we can't know what love is. It's impossible. There has to be opposition. There has to be the other side of the coin. It can't exist. And if those things don't exist, then we do not exist, and God does not exist. And yet here we are. We are in existence. I can see you. I can see your faces out there. Those can see me over the live stream. We are here, and we do exist because there are opposites. Because there is suffering, there is good. Because there is evil, there is good. Because there is hate, there is love. It has to be. Otherwise, we are nothing. We're not here Jesus gave answer to his disciples when he was speaking to them. In Luke, in the 21st chapter, in the 22nd verse, you know, the disciples posed this question: how are we going to know when the end times are here? How are we going to know when these things are going to come to pass? How are we going to see your return? And part of his answer is this, because he's explaining to them, you know, you're going to be killed. You're going to be persecuted. You're going to be chased down. And he answers them, "For these be the days of vengeance, that all things which are written may be fulfilled." You know, God has a purpose in this. He has a purpose in every soul that is brought forth on this earth. And so that his prophecies may be fulfilled. These things take place. Whether it be for his righteous judgment to take place later on, whether it be to stir us up to action, whether it's at some future time. You know, they probably couldn't see the chain of events that was going to take place, that their martyrdom would bring many souls to know the gospel. You know, they probably never saw it. You know, I think of Moroni as he's writing the last bits of the Book of Mormon here, and he's abridging it. Now, he didn't get to see in his lifetime what it was going to bring. He couldn't make the connections in his lifetime. He just had to go on the faith that God had a purpose as he watched the destruction of his people take place. And all his brothers and sisters, his sons, his daughters, they all got wiped away in front of his eyes. He saw it all. But yet, many years later, his prophecies were fulfilled. And so we look for peace in this world. And Jesus again says in John, in the 14th chapter, 27th verse, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give unto you. Not as the world giveth, give I unto you. Let not your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid." So there is this distinction. A distinction between the peace that the world can give, you know, because the world gives peace, and you know, through finance, through being blessed with, you know, financial means, being rich, you know, that's a form of peace. But you know, that's not in most of the world, because the world can't give it to everyone. And we seek justice through our court systems, and yet we find so often we don't get peace there. We don't get the justice we seek. The world cannot give us the peace that we seek. But Christ tells us, don't worry. I have a peace that I can give you. I can give this peace to you. Because he came and he conquered the world, conquered death, and gave redemption to all. Second answer. Why is it these innocent people suffer? John, in the 9th chapter, in the first verse. "And Jesus passed by, and he saw a man which was blind from his birth." You know, surely there's nothing that an infant can do to receive blindness. You know, they can't sin. We know children can't sin. And yet here we have this blind man. "And his disciples asked him, saying, Master, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" This is the classic trap of the human mind. He did something, or somebody did something to cause this. You know, and it makes sense. There's a lot of things that I can do. We can travel the line of events. You know, if I drive too fast down the freeway and I wreck my car and become injured, I mean, look at that. You were driving too fast. Your actions led to this result. If I take up smoking and I get lung cancer, we can look at that. Look, there's a chain of events. Look, you did this and it brought that. And so sometimes we can't see all the chain of events. We can't see everything that was put together. We can't see why things happen. And so we ascribe it to, well, must have been some sin in your life, and that is why you're suffering from whatever you're suffering from. Well, what did Christ say about this? What was his answer to his disciples? Jesus answered, "Neither hath this man sinned nor his parents, but that the works of God should be made manifest in him." So he tells it. Now, I'm sure that this man probably had a sin or two in his life. I'm sure his parents had sins. But what Christ is telling us is like, I don't pass this judgment in this life. That's not what happens. I don't take judgments out on you. This is your time of probation. We live in a world that we can act upon, and we live in a world that acts upon us. A fallen world. A world which, you know, disease takes place. Weather takes place. Children are born blind. But why? So that the works of God can be made known. He then went on and healed this man. Caused a great calamity and amongst those Pharisees and those rabbis, because he did it on the Sabbath day. Oh, he committed an evil act. He did something. Told this man to go do something, and he did it on the Sabbath day and then washed himself. He wasn't supposed to do anything on the Sabbath day. And yet here we had this healing take place. So that God's will can be made manifest. God could show himself what he's capable of. So what are we supposed to do during these times? Third Nephi, the fifth chapter, 61st verse. "Verily, verily, I say unto you," this is Christ speaking, "give unto you to be the light of this people. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Behold, do men light a candle and put it under a bushel? Nay, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light to all that are in the house. Therefore, let your light so shine before this people that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven." We have a work to do in this life. We have a work to do for those that don't have any fathers, that are orphans, for the widows, for the blind, and for the hungry. We have a work to do. They're here so that we can show them the works of God. They are our opportunity to give of ourselves, to show the love of Christ, to show them the opposite of what they're in. That even though they may be fatherless, they have a father. Even though they may be sick, they can be cared for. It's a work that we have to do. Those are the works of God that are made manifest. We should be out there about his business, glorifying our Father in heaven. Continuing on, our answer. Third Nephi, the fifth chapter, the 90th verse. "Behold, I say unto you, love your enemies. Bless them that curse you. Do good to them that hate you. Pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you, that ye may be the children of your Father which is in heaven. For he maketh his sun to rise on the evil and on the good. Therefore, those things which were of old time, which were under the law, in me are all fulfilled." Again, we have a work to do. To love our enemies. To pray for them. To do good to them. Why? So we can get this title, the children of God, children of our Father in heaven. I would love it to hear that one day. For the Father to call me his child. How do I get there? I go about his business. I go about and show his work and his mercy. Because how do we know mercy for ourselves if we don't give mercy to others? And you can tell me, it's not fair. It's not fair. No, it's not fair. And you'd be right if you were looking at the evil in this world and how it's not answered. People get away with their evil deeds. Just go to any police department, you can see, usually have a large case file of unsolved cases. People got away with it. Unanswered crime, unanswered evil. It's got free reign. It's not fair. It's not fair. Disease comes in. It's absolutely not fair because some people suffer so much more than others. It robs people of good health. Why is it one person has health and one person doesn't? It takes the lives of children. You go down here to our children's hospital, you'll see children battling cancer. It's not fair. Disasters come in. Tornado comes through. Takes one home, doesn't take another. It's not fair. Someone loses a life. It's not fair. It's absolutely not fair. And we can sit here and we can cry out, I want it to be fair. I want it. But do I? Do I want it to be fair? If I demanded and I received a desire that all bad was done away, what is it that I'd be left with? What would I have? I'd be left with no choices. There would be no decision to choose between good and evil. I'd be nothing more than a germ. Just replicating and dying, replicating and dying. That would be no existence at all. I would have nothing. The desire of my heart was to take it all away. Take it. I don't want it suffering to go on in this life. Take it all. But then I would have no ability to choose good. My probation would be meaningless. So if I demanded that God execute his justice, that evil is taken care of when it's seen, or when it's unseen, what would happen? What would happen if God did that for me? Because he can snap his finger, take it all away if he wanted to. He'd snap his finger and justice would be exacted upon everyone that deserved it. What would happen? He'd start with me. If I demanded it, he would give it to me. He would execute his justice on me because I am a sinner. He'd start right here. So I ask again, do I really want fairness? Do I want it to be fair? Because if I do, I have to consider what that means. I'd be left with no choice. I couldn't choose between good and evil. I couldn't choose to do right because there would be no wrong. And if I demanded justice, he would give me justice. I think one of the fallacies that a lot of modern Christian theologians or preachers have given us is that, you know, if we follow Christ, there's this idea out there that everything's going to be just fine. Like, you follow Christ, you suffer calamity, well, it's because your faith wasn't deep enough. If you follow Christ, you know, you should have health and wealth. All these things are going to come to you. But I don't find that to be true. I don't find anywhere in my scriptures where it says, I follow Christ, I'm going to have all my bills taken care of. I'm never going to suffer from the coronavirus. I don't read that. Matter of fact, I read quite the opposite. John 15:18. If the world hates you, know that it hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love its own. But because you are not of the world, but I have chosen you out of the world, therefore the world hateth you. That doesn't sound like a bed of roses. If we follow Christ, there are those that will hate us. It's not going to be easy. And he doesn't promise that. He promises the opposite. If you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, people are going to dislike you. People are going to say false things about you. We get denied opportunities in this life because of our conviction. We're promised it's going to be hard. I find another promise. Going back into Genesis, the third chapter, in 16th verse. Unto the woman he said, I will greatly multiply thy sorrow and thy conception. In sorrow thou shalt bring forth children, and thy desire shall be to thy husband. He shall rule over thee. And unto Adam he said, because thou hast hearkened unto the voice of thy wife, and hast eaten of the tree, of which I command thee, saying, thou shalt not eat of it. Cursed is the ground for thy sake, and sorrow shalt thou eat of it all the days of thy life. Thorns and thistles shall it bring forth to thee, and thou shalt eat the herb of the field. And the sweat of thy face shalt thou eat bread, till thou return into the ground. For out of it wast thou taken, for dust thou art, and unto dust shalt thou return. It's a promise. We're going to have to work hard. We're going to suffer pain trying to get food on the table. We suffer bringing children into this world. It's a promise given to them. It's not going to be easy. This life wasn't meant to be easy. We have these opposing forces which we have to face and we have to choose. So I don't find where it says all is well once you take on Jesus. It's not there. So how? How do we overcome? How do we conquer? How do we get past this? How do I find hope in something that is so hopeless? Well, I can't have my hope in this life. I can't have my hope in this world. In the third Nephi, 6th chapter, 110th verse, lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth, where moth and rust doth corrupt, and thieves break through and steal. Lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, where thieves do not break through nor steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. And that's the point. If we look for justice, if we look for equality, if we look for fairness, if we look for things in this life, if we look for financial stability, if we look for health, it can all be corrupted. Because we live in this fallen world. It's all corruptible. And it's not going to last. Financial crisis happens, we lose all our money. You can lose your health. Everything in here, everything is corruptible. It was designed so. It wasn't designed to last. We're given a time, a short time, where we have to make this choice. And we have to focus on what the goal is. And the goal is not here in this life. This goal is in the next. Because it's there we will find what we want so very badly. It is there we'll find peace. It is there we'll find mercy. It's there we'll find justice. It's there we'll find health and well-being, treasures beyond measure. So that's what our focus has to be. If it's on this life, we're going to get depressed, sorrowful. People are going to let us down. It's going to happen. So we have to place our hope in something else. With that, he has given us some other promises. Matthew, the 24th chapter, 13th verse. But he that shall endure unto the end, the same shall be saved. It's a promise. He's going to take care of us. We have to do our part. We have to endure to the end. To reach down, dig into reserves of courage and faith and hope. coming into church and be uplifted, because it's taxing. There's a cost to courage. There's a cost to faith. We have a bank and there's only so much in it, so we've got to come here. We've got to lift each other up. We've got to minister to one another so that we can go back out in the world and endure. John, in the 14th chapter, verses 1 through 3. Let not your heart be troubled. Ye believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house there are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and I prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there you may be also. This is a wonderful promise. He's coming back. He'll dwell with us forever. Mansions. He wants what we want. He wants to give us mercy, so we can dwell with him forever. We can reside with him. Such a wonderful, wonderful promise. So we have been given the right to choose. We've been given the ability. 2 Nephi, in the first chapter, 115th verse. Adam fell that men might be, and men are, that they might have joy. And the Messiah cometh in the fullness of time, that he might redeem the children of men from the fall. Because that they are redeemed from the fall, they have become free forever, knowing good from evil, to act for themselves, and not to be acted upon, save it be by the punishment of the Lord at that great and last day, according to the commandments which God hath given. Wherefore men are free according to the flesh, and all things are given to them which are expedient unto man. And they are free to choose liberty and eternal life to the great mediator of all men, or to choose captivity and death according to the captivity and power of the devil. For he seeketh that all men might be miserable like unto himself. And now, my sons, I would that ye should look to the great mediator and hearken unto his great commandments and be faithful unto his words and choose eternal life according to the will of his Holy Spirit, and not choose eternal death according to the will of the flesh and the evil which is therein, which give the spirit of the devil power to captivate, to bring you down to hell, that he may reign over you in his own kingdom. I have spoken these few words unto you all, my sons, that in the last days of my probation, and I have chosen the good part, according to the words of the prophet, and I have none other object, save it be the everlasting welfare of your souls. So it is your choice how you view these things. It is your choice to choose. That is why we have this life. It's for us to choose. It's why we have unfairness. It's why we have hate. It's why we have sickness and disease. Because we have to choose. Choose what we're going to do despite the fact that people get sick. How are we going to help them? That is our job. How do we help them? Despite the fact that our enemies work against us, we have a job to pray for them. And to do good to them. And that is our choice. So we must choose between good and evil. Thank you for your time.